her last day. So if you have business with her, please try not to hold it till the 31st. She is trying to wrap up her time with us and get things done and train Brittany, who is our new office administrator. And that is all I have today. Come into this place and bring the story of your life, tales of triumph and tales of despair, tales of joy and tales of sadness, maybe even tales of being cast away. In this house, all stories are welcome. All tales can be told. Come and let us worship here together. Please take just a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to your neighbor. And give them just a minute. Jack is your kid.
Please join us in singing our chalice lighting song. The words are in your order of service, and our accompanist will play through the song once so you have the melody. Body or spirit, as you are willing or able, and join us in singing our first hymn, It's Pretty Planet. It's not in the hymnal. The words are in your order of service. I'm a firm believer in coming up with your own hymns as you go through life. So we're going to go with something a little different today. We're going to try this in a round. So I'll play through this once, and then we'll have section A, section B, and section C. And so then I'll point to sections, and you'll start singing, and then just keep singing, because everyone else is going to be singing something different. So listen to the people that are right next to you as opposed to like all the way across the room. It also means that you have to sing loud to help with your section. So,
let's see if we go through this.
Section A, your part's coming up. And
this pretty planet spinning to space. You're a garden, you're a harbor, you're a holy place.
Section B.
This pretty planet spinning to space. You're a garden, you're a harbor, you're a holy place. This pretty planet spinning to space. You're a garden, you're a harbor, you're a holy place. Golden sun going down, you're gentle blue giant, your fin on so round.
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we try to surround this community with the spirit of love in everything that we do. My name is the Reverend Amy Shaw, and I am the worship associate for this morning's service. No matter who you are or where you've come from, you are so welcome here. We welcome people who have known nothing but acceptance in their life, and we welcome those who have known the pain of exclusion and those who have suffered disdain for their differences. We're recognized by the UUA as a welcoming congregation, which means no matter who you love or what pronouns you use, you're welcome here. After the service, please feel free to join us for refreshments and conversations in the social hall. Stop by the welcome table there to find out more about us. If you look in the bulletin you got when you came here, that's our order of service, and it includes announcements of upcoming church activities, and everyone is welcome to join us. If you want to stay current on what we are doing, please check out our webpage, which is at lcuuc.org, or like and follow us on Facebook, because we post everything there also. Please take just a moment at this point in the service to silence your electronics. You're welcome to have them. Just keep them quiet. And we're so glad that you've chosen to celebrate and worship with us today.
One of the ways we care for the wider community is by contributing to local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have food items to share, either please bring them down now, or you can wait until the children go out for RE and give it to them to carry them down. Free child labor. I'd like each of you to stay in your seats and enjoy a musical story, which will be done with the help of Doug Estee. So how many of you know where Kentucky is? How many of you know where paradise is?
Ooh, me, pick me.
Paradise was a small town in western Kentucky that was kind of one of those backwoods, never... Sorry, we've been having some disagreements lately. Yeah. So Paradise was one of those small backwoods, never touched by society towns, and John Prine wrote a song about it. When did he? Like 90s, 80s, some time ago.
Longer, like 70s.
Oh, hold on. So, Paradise is no longer there. It was. Paradise is lost for anybody. Paradise was bought up by the Tennessee Valley Association affiliate. It's the same thing. After a coal plant that was installed there produced too much pollution and caused the town to basically become uninhabitable. So it was bought up and leveled, and the only thing that currently remains of Paradise is a small cemetery on top of a hill. And John Prine wrote the song kind of as an environmentalist song, but I like to think of it as memories and remembering a place that you're never going to be able to go back to, and this perfect time in a perfect area that is unduplicatable, unable to be duplicated, something like that. All right.
Okay, ready?
Yep. Helps if I played it in the right key.
When I was a child, my family would travel down to western Kentucky, where my parents were born. Where there's a backwards old town that's often remembered so many times that my memories are worn. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. Well, sometimes we'd travel right down the Green River to the abandoned old prison down by Edrie Hill, where the air smelled like snakes and we'd shoot with our pistols, but empty pop bottles was all we would kill. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. Then the coal company came with the world's largest shovel, and they tortured the timber and stripped all the land. Well, they dug for their coal till the land was forsaken. Then they wrote it all down as the progress of man. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away.
When I die, let my ashes flow down the Green River. Let my soul roll on up to the Rochester Dam. I'll be halfway to heaven with paradise waiting just 5 miles away from wherever I am. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away.
Thank you. May I have today's lantern bearer? May the light and love of our chalice lead you today and every day. And then would you please help in singing the children to their RE? The song is called For You Shall Go Out, and the words are written in your order of service. Once was a man who lived an ordinary life with an ordinary car and an ordinary job in an ordinary building. One ordinary day, as the man was walking out of the building to go home, he noticed a panhandler on the corner. The man went up to the panhandler and gave him a quarter and went about his day. The following afternoon, on his way out of the building, the man saw the same panhandler on the same street corner, and so he gave him another quarter. This went on for quite some time, to the point where the panhandler didn't even ask the man for change, and the man always gave it to him anyways. Now, one day, the man went on a business trip all around the globe and was gone for a couple of weeks. Didn't return for quite some time, and he eventually came home, and on the next day, as he was leaving his building, the same panhandler came up to him, shook his hand in greeting, and said, "You owe me $3.50. I've been gone for 4 months, so you guys can figure out the balance. The morning offering when I'll be given and received." He tried to look like he had a little bit of money. Drifter with a southern drawl. Well, I could tell right away by the way he was running that that boy was just begging to crawl. At least a junkie knows what he needs. You get a man all strung out on his own greed and he'll give up everything he's got for just one shot of having it all. Well, he took every last cent of his savings on a trip to the local track. He had a tip from a friend, bet it all down to win on a horse named Heart Attack. He won no fool, boys, he didn't bet it all. So everything was cool when that horse took a fall. But then he turned around and lost the rest, trying to win it all back. He wanted easy money.
that don't understand. You scheme and you plan, but you can't get your hands on none of that easy money. Well, she was watching him from a table, not too soft, but not too tough. Well, she figured by the way he was throwing money around that he was sure damn good looking enough. Walked her way over and she shot him a wink. He took his last $5 and he bought her a drink. And by the time they hit the Motel 6, figured they was in love, love, love. She loved that easy money. Sad, but it's true. Everybody wants the most they can possibly get. For the least they can possibly do. She wanted easy money. Yeah, I don't understand. You scheme and you plan, but you can't get your hands on none of that easy money. Well, it must have been 2 weeks later. He got a call from a business friend. He had a surefire steal of an investment deal. And honey, guess what? He let both of us in. Well, they took all their savings out of the bank. And on the way home, they stopped to gas up the tank. She stepped in for some cigs and then she never saw the buster again. He got that easy money. It's sad, but it's true. Everybody wants the most they can possibly get. For the least they can possibly do. He wanted easy money. Yeah, don't understand. You scheme and you plan, but you can't get your hands on none of that easy money. Oh, you scheme and you plan, but you can't get your hands on that easy money.
Thank you. Thanks, sir. For these gifts given and received for the life and work of this community.
This is the time in our service where we share our joys and our concerns together. Before the service, you're always welcome to light a candle silently at the candle table. But during the service, we speak aloud and we light our candles together. So would anyone who has a joy or a concern to share, please raise your hand and one of the ushers will bring you a microphone.
Good morning and Merry Christmas. My joy is for the family that we are and having seeing those children go out for their religious education. This morning brings tears to my eyes, but it's that type of season. And we also have joys for all the families and how we work together and play together and help each other.
Hi, I'm Barb. Please light a candle of concern for my sister Becky. She had her third chemo a week ago Friday and has really taken her down. And a candle of joy that I get to come here at least once a week and feel the love from everybody.
My name's Al. a candle of hope that our country, especially, can become kindergartners. Let's hope that beyond the community we have here, that more and more people can be accepting whatever it is that's different than them.
Will, would you light a candle of joy for the birthday of my late sister, Tracy? Christmas Eve was her birthday, and her girls had a wonderful celebration and a great night remembering their mom. And a candle of concern for my dear friend, Bill Lurson. Bill was the bane of my existence at my last church. He once climbed in through a skylight to scare the snot out of me. And he broke his hip the other day. He's doing very well, but it was a unpleasant Christmas surprise.
And my name's Chris, and I'd like to light a candle of joy. Beth had surgery about a week and a half ago and is recovering well, and hopefully this is the last knee surgery since she had three of them this year. So everything's going well.
And this is Jim. If you would light a candle of concern for the families affected by the tornadoes in Texas last night and throughout the whole southeast U.S. over the past week, and a candle for the Muslim community that had their mosque burned down last night in Houston.
And we light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sorrows that we hold deeply, but which we have not been able to name here today.
We carry our stories by Alexa Toronto. We carry our stories like the clouds hold the rain, slowly collecting movement by movement, woven into every and every cell. As time passes, the pain, the trauma, the hurt, and the joy collects. So subtly, so quietly, it fills and fills until the perfectly imperfect moment of ripeness, pregnant with potential to
overflow, expanding, filling, collecting, until it peaks. The rain pours and the tears fall. Freely, uncontrollably, and necessarily, cyclically washing away what was, clearing for what is. As we sweetly become more aware of this invisible process occurring within us and around us, we may adjust what we decide to hold on to and for how long. We may allow it to fall away as sweetly as the clouds release the rain, for we can't stop the cycle. Yet we can refine how we maneuver among it, tuning into what has been woven and what we are weaving in each and every moment. Here ends the first reading.
Please join me in a silent moment of meditation or the spirit of prayer.
an excerpt from Big Fish by Daniel Wallace. "See," the old man said, "we all have stories just as you do, ways in which he touched us, helped us, gave us jobs, lent us money, sold it to us wholesale. Lots of stories, big and small. They all add up. Over a lifetime, it all adds up. That's why we're here, William. We're a part of him, of who he is, just as he is a part of us. You still don't understand, do you?" I didn't. But as I stared at the man and he stared back at me, in my father's dream, I remembered where we'd met before. "And what did my father do for you?" I asked him. And the old man smiled. "He made me laugh," he said. Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit as you are willing and able and join me in singing our second hymn, "Those Were the Days." The words to the chorus are again in your order of service. Hopefully, most of you know this song already. If you don't, we go through the chorus plenty of times. You'll pick it up as we go. Sorry, this is the one that I don't have memorized. But it gets quiet in here. All right.
Once upon a time, there was a tavern where we used to raise a glass or two. Remember how we laughed away the hours and think of all the great things we would do. Those were the days, my friend, we thought they'd never end. We sing and dance forever and a day. We live the life we choose, we fight and on the way. If by chance I'd see you in the tavern, we'd smile at one another and we'd say, those were the days, my friend, we thought they'd never end. We'd sing and dance forever and a day. We'd live the life we choose, we'd fight and saw your face and heard you call my name. Oh,
and we're older but no wiser. For in our hearts the dreams are still the same. I'll get the right chord eventually. Those were the days, my friend, we thought they'd never end. We sing and dance forever and today. We live the life we choose, we fight and never lose, for we were young and sure to have our way.
So I'm currently a freshman at the University of Evansville in Indiana, on track for a Bachelor of Sciences in theater with an emphasis on performance. Long story short, I'm going to college to be an actor. Among the various unemployment jokes I've heard, a couple of people have legitimately asked me why I act. I'd like to begin answering this, funnily enough, with a story. When I was in sixth grade, I was strong-armed by one of my theater teachers into joining the school forensics team. For those of you without children who are wondering why middle schoolers were competing in criminal investigations, forensics is a public speaking competition with categories ranging from mock news programs to infomercials to simply reading a story. I, being one of the only ones willing to do it, was pressured into the moments in history category, one of the driest, most dull sections to have to sit in on simply because it's a bloody history lesson, and I would very much like it if you would please bring up one of the funny infomercial people again. Thank you very much. Now, one of the first things explained to me was the need for a good topic and a tagline, something unique that breaks the mold and a quote the judges will remember you by. The time frame we were given to work with was 1200 to 1400 CE, so naturally, I did the discovery of tapioca pudding by a band of lost, absolutely desperate explorers. Part of my speech was the story of the explorers, not revealing the true subject of my research, with the final line of my presentation explaining that the entire time I was talking about the number one dessert choice in assisted living centers all over the country. And the best part about my piece? People laughed. Being a 12-year-old kid starting out in middle school, pressured to stand up in front of a bunch of strangers in dress pants and a sports coat, you have no idea how relieving that felt. This honest moment right after the big reveal, where the room burst into chuckles and giggles and laughter at the revelation that I was talking about pudding the entire time. And it was one of the first times I ever felt really connected with a group of strangers like that. And it's probably also one of my first serious acting experiences, and largely contributed to my choice to go to college to get an actual degree for something a sixth grader can do. Thanks, Mom and Dad. But what amazes me to this day is just how a simple story, the discovery of tapioca, led to such a connection between people who had never met 15 minutes before. And even more so, how the other people in my category and I bonded over our presentations. I came to know certain people only through the stories. There was Samurai Kid, Medieval Weapons Guy, Dude with the Machu Picchu thing. Our stories came to define each of us because that's all we actually knew about each other. We didn't know each other's names or schools, just these collections of facts and stories. I freely admit, I will never be able to tell you their names, but I can still remember snippets of their presentations. Whether that's because of how small the category was besides the point. Part of the reason I'm an actor is to be a storyteller. That's actually kind of what I say to people who tell me that acting is lying. I'm not lying. I'm just telling somebody else's truth. I want to be able to share as many stories with as many people as I possibly can. Because our stories are a reflection of who we are. They're fantasies about what we wish we could be, or they're confessions of past failures and hopes to overcome them in the future, or they're moral lessons meant to pass down a message onto people, or even sometimes they're just something we tell ourselves and others to make people feel a little better in the long run. There's a quote that I remember when I think about these things, given to me by one of the greatest acting teachers I will ever have. If the eyes are the window to the soul, then the voice is the window to the heart. It's a bit broader than the idea of stories, but I feel it fits the topic well. We use our stories to show what lies in our hearts. Sometimes we tell them through music, sometimes through pictures, but we are constantly telling and retelling more stories than could ever be written down. Another story I'd like to share with you. I was recently in my college's production of Big Fish, a musical based on the Tim Burton film of the same name, about a boy growing up with a father who always told extravagant stories about himself, and the boy learning what was true and false and in between with the stories. The boy, growing up with his father, eventually became jaded to all of the tall tales, thinking that his father just wanted to show off and look cool to his son, driving a wedge between them eventually. We learn, though, though the boy thought that the father told all of these stories to impress him, his dad was really trying to inspire him. If he just dreamed big enough and hoped hard enough and strived long enough, he could fight the metaphorical dragons in his life. His stories were a way of passing down his passion and love and excitement all through the medium of pure, unbridled imagination. The climax of the play comes when the son finishes his father's story, describing them breaking out of a hospital and heading back to a river from the opening of the show, where all of the characters and friends from the father's stories are waiting for him to tell him just how much they love him. His final words to his son are an apology for all of the failures and a hope that, when someone tells his story, he's remembered as something bigger than he was, before he passes away in his son's arms, finally finding reconciliation. The stories we share tie us together and allow us a level of understanding and undiluted compassion that we rarely see nowadays. They let us share our hope and our faith with one another, and they let us share our love. With something as simple as a story, we let someone feel the love and triumph that they may be lacking. We give them a chance to believe, at least for a moment, that they're a brave hero fighting dragons, or a noble champion defending the weak, or someone who gets to have a happy ending. Tangentially related, following a rehearsal for Big Fish, near my campus is a restaurant called Rally's. If you've ever been to a Checkers, it's the same owners, just with a different name. So this Rally's is pretty small and right on the edge of one of the sketchier neighborhoods of Evansville. Rally's is open 24 hours, so it's a good place for like late-night meals and snack things. So when we get there, we ran into quite a few interesting characters, being the middle of the night. A couple of highlights ahead of us in line were a couple that were almost certainly high out of their minds. After ordering our food, a man came in claiming he did not receive the fries he ordered, arguing with the cashier until they eventually gave him a second set of fries, and we later found the missing fries uneaten in his bag sitting next to where he was sitting while he ate. The most interesting person we met that night was named Eric. He came up to us asking for help, explaining to us that his car had broken down earlier, thanking us profusely and showing us anything to prove he wasn't trying to murder us or mug us or such. We gave him a lift into Kentucky. It's not too far of a drive, about 5 minutes to the border. Small car shop that is AAA had outsourced to, so he needed to go down there and pay for the car. Along the way, he showed us pictures of his wife and child, and actually, he started talking to us about actors and movies once he found out that we were all theater people. After paying for the service, he comes rushing back with a baby bottle in his hand, and we drove him back home. I like this story not only because I find it curious that we saw so many vastly different people that night, but also because I love how humanizing it was. You never know who someone is or their story until you bother to sit and listen. Eric mentioned how most of the people around there wouldn't have given him the time of day, let alone a ride, because he was black. Never mind the very nice clothes that he was dressed in or the working phone that he was carrying. But the interesting twist was that some time ago, Eric saw a truck broken down on the side of the road with a little girl leaning out the back window waving for help. He pulled over, helped them get towed, and then he drove them over to a restaurant, got them a little something to eat. And the twist? Detailed into the back of the truck was the modern Confederate flag. But he stopped and helped them anyway. Not all of our stories are actively trying to help someone or inspire them. Sometimes neither the teller nor the listener even knows how important a story can be to them. Sometimes a story sucker punches us with emotions and we're snapped unawares into a completely new world. A whole new world, if you will. My next story for you actually comes from a choreographer for a show that I was in a while back. And I get a little choked up every time I tell it, so this is the waterworks warning. His name's Jeff. And Jeff is a fairly prolific actor and at one point was even Quasimodo in one of the Disney World or Land, I'm not sure which, productions of Hunchback of Notre Dame. I know Whole New World is from Aladdin, but you tried transitioning from Car Troubles into Disney. For anyone who, like me, has never seen The Hunchback of Notre Dame, the basic plot is this. Quasimodo, the titular character, is taken in as a baby by a bigoted, fire-and-brimstone religious judge and is kept hidden from the world due to his appearance. He's given the job of the bell ringer and the caretaker of the Notre Dame Cathedral, and his only interactions are with the judge, who is emotionally and physically abusive, and the imaginary gargoyles, who serve the obligatory non-human companion role. He falls in love with a woman in a traveling group named Esmeralda. The judge, also falling for Esmeralda, sees her beauty as evil and corruptive, and because he can't have her, decides to have her executed. Quasimodo saves her, the judge falls to his death, and Quasimodo's existence is exposed, and he is finally accepted by the world. He unfortunately doesn't end up with Esmeralda, though that's due to a subplot with a prince and some other stuff that isn't really important right now. So Jeff finishes a performance. And on this theater, there's a small part of the stage that juts out into the audience, kind of like a fashion runway. He goes out and is taking his bows, and he's high-fiving kids and all that, and someone grabs his hand. He looks down, and he sees the hand that's holding his only has a couple of fingers. And he looks up, and he sees a kid with various physical disfigurements, and the kid is crying and smiling, and amidst all the cheering, Jeff hears the kid shout out, "We did it, Quasimodo. We did it. We did it. Not you, or I, or they, but we." This story, an adaptation of an animated movie roughly based on an old folk legend that is extremely factually inaccurate and partially racist, had such a profound base impact on that child that the only way to express it was that they, the two of them, had managed to defeat all of the people who tried to tell them they weren't good enough or pretty enough or anything enough to be happy, to be loved. Through this story, they made a connection of happiness and love and life that I guarantee you will stay with them for the rest of their lives. I'm going to tell you right now, I don't have an easy way to transition into my next story. The previous song lyric transition is proof enough of that. And it's one of the hardest stories for me to tell, partially due to the fact that there are a lot of unresolved pieces and it's still kind of going on. So I'll just go into it. I went to Milwaukee High School of the Arts, a magnet school in, you guessed it, Milwaukee, where I was a theater major and had 2 hours of theater classes per day. My sophomore year, I was bumped up a level in my theater classes, so I was with people a grade ahead of me. And one of those people was a boy named Juan Carlos Aguila. It wasn't really into my junior year, his senior year, that I got to know him, when I also had English class with him and was on the slam poetry team with him. He was always a very large source of energy. And he also was very loud and had a very strong personality that either loved you or hated you. One of my favorite memories of him is a character named Vinny the Vent Boy, a high schooler who made his way around bullies by crawling through school vents, a character that was specifically written for him after he came up with the idea in one of our plays. Juan Carlos died this past January. He had a disease that ran in his family and started to have complications from it his senior year, and was hospitalized a few times due to seizures before he eventually succumbed to it. I'll admit that I didn't know him extremely well. We weren't best friends, and in all honesty, he probably didn't like me very much for most of the time that I knew him. But he was my friend. And one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life is to watch someone else's story end. To know someone who stopped making memories and stories to tell in the future. I occasionally find myself talking to him or thinking about him, and for some reason, it gives me a lot of comfort and stability. There have been several times that he's held me together. I don't know what any of you believe about what happens after you die, and I'm not going to pretend to know, but he's convinced me that you don't end. Your stories never finish. As long as there is one person who remembers them and tells and retells them, you never just disappear. Your story gets passed on and woven into other stories. And I suppose that's also my interpretation of the whole interdependent web of life principle. All of our stories are linked together, and we will never be able to fully separate ourselves from one another. As long as I can remember him, he isn't really gone. Now I'm going to leave you all with one last extremely tone-shifting story. Funnily enough, it's actually about writing this sermon. This all started several months back after Amy's silent auction service about hand jobs. A group was going out to lunch and discussing the many ways one could word the title of a service to ensure hilarity. And somewhere in there, I joked about me doing a sermon someday. Lo and behold, shortly thereafter, I was informed that I was scheduled for a Sunday in November and to get the title to the board so that they could put it in the calendar as soon as possible. After my initial shock and disbelief, I was rescheduled for a December date when I would actually be in town and began to decide on what I would talk about for 15 to 20 minutes. The first topic I attempted from my list of several was Remember, Kids, Don't Smoke, a commentary on how we focus on prolonging life instead of enjoying it. Then came This Above All, a sermon on remaining true to oneself through the lens of a dick joke telling William Shakespeare. Third in the line was The 500 Miles We Walk, discussing the effort we put into finding and holding on to love. Then I came back to the Shakespeare bit, but tried to squeeze in a whole bunch of other ideas I had. Some of the better subjects that never fully saw the light of day, a discussion on our tendency to make monsters out of people we don't like, the power of words that we use, and a point about how fair and equal treatment are two completely different things, and what I will only refer to you, even in conversation, as Hitler, Stalin, and Mussolini, unexpected role models. Finally, in late September, I settled on this. And along the way, I realized something. This is really hard. I do not envy Amy. This one time was nerve-wracking enough. I don't know how she does this nearly every single week. Surprising to me, as well as to anyone who knows me, it was actually very difficult to come up with something to talk about for that long. I would usually get about to like the 10-minute mark and just run out of stuff to talk. Legitimately shocking. But in all seriousness, looking back at these stories, I realized that I don't just want to tell other people's stories. I want to make my own. And I think that's something we all want, to be able to leave a story behind for people to tell. We're all heroes of our own stories. We just want them to be big and epic enough that they're worth remembering and passing down to the future. The end.
We extinguish this chalice and we know that together our stories will carry light into the world.
I've seen this all before, when I was just a child. I met a witch who took a bow and showed me how it ended. We stood here on the shore. The air was sweet and mild. With disbelief implausibly suspended. And in my child's imagination, I remember you. Though I didn't know if we were foes or friends. Now you're standing here. I see the vision coming clear. I know exactly how this ends. It ends with you. It ends with me. It ends with the way a story's ending is supposed to be. A bit insane. A touch of pain. Adeptly told. Yet uncontrolled. It ends with faith. It ends with love. It ends with water in a river and the sun above. Part epic tale. Part fire sail. Yet all sincere and standing here. I know I wasn't perfect. I know my life was small. I know that I pretended that I knew it all. But when you tell my story, and I hope somebody does, remember me as something bigger than I was. It ends with sons. It ends with wives. It ends with knowing when the pavement bends, we find our lives. So let it come and let me go. Show me the waves and let them flow. It all ends well. This much I know.
Let us go out into the world of stories and find out how it ends. Each of us living our tale and learning from the companions with us. May we weave together in love and laughter, tears and pain, peace, and may it be so.